Thank you so much, Flaminia, for the introduction and also for the invitation. It's great to see you all. I was planning to visit PI last year, which I was unfortunately canceled due to COVID, but still it's great that we can see you and talk to you. I think for the topic that I want to present today, PI is the exact right place to speak, and I would really appreciate any comments and questions on this project. So let me start by a very quick overview of what is this project about. So this is a simple question that has been asked before from different angles. So the question is, from an information theoretic point of view, what is the most efficient ontological model that describes a possibly noisy quantum mechanical system? So, and there are different ways to quantify this notion of most efficient. So here I want to focus on the idea of inaccessible information, the model that has minimum inaccessible information. And I will formally define what do I mean by inaccessible information, but the intuition is simple. The intuition is to specify the state of a quantum system, we need basically an infinite amount of classical information to specify exact pure state, infinite amount of classical information, but we can only extract a finite amount of information from the system. To be more precise, we can only transmit a finite amount of information, for example, with a qubit, whereas we need infinite amount of information to specify the exact state of a qubit. And so there's this discrepancy between these two, information that you can access versus the information that is there in any ontological model that describes the system. And I want to quantify this. And again, there are different ways to quantify this, and there have been other approaches to this. Here in this talk, my guiding principle to how to quantify, for how to quantify this inaccessible information is the principle of preparation non-contextuality. This is the principle that is basically a generalized notion of the contextuality. And I basically want to interpret preparation contextuality as the presence of an inaccessible information. So in a way, this notion of inaccessible information, you can also interpret it as a measure or a quantifier of the amount of preparation contextuality in the system. So the motivations for this work, the first motivation is just probing the non-classical features of a quantum system, both from theoretical and experimental point of view. So for example, I find a new class of non-contextuality inequalities that give us tools for probing a non-contextuality through experiments. One particular aspect of this project that I think is interesting for me is the fact that it allows me to think of also about the effect of noise on quantum systems. How much contextuality will be suppressed by under noise, and what are possible noise thresholds above which contextuality is not observable. And another motivation is just the idea that if you somehow have a quantifier of contextuality, then it can be used to understand how much advantage you can get from contextuality through various information processing tasks. So it has been claimed or shown that demonstrated that contextuality is a resource for information processing tasks, and so I think by quantifying this amount of contextuality, you can find a limit on the amount of advantage, quantum advantage that you can get from contextuality. I should mention that this sort of ideas, the information theoretic point of view to this problem, to this idea of inaccessible information, this has been studied from many different angles in the last 20 years or so. There have been many works, this is just an incomplete list here, and many of these people have been at PI or are currently at PI. So again, I think PI is a great, the right exact place to talk about these ideas. So here's the outline of the rest of my talk. I first start by talking about some preliminaries, ontological models, operational theories, preparation non-contextuality. For this audience, I probably don't need to define this, but I still need to go through this to explain my notations that I use in the rest of the talk. And then I will talk about this idea of information, inaccessible information. And I first define it, and then to find this bounds on amount of information, inaccessible information, I first give you a new proof of preparation contextuality of quantum mechanics. So this will be the first step. And then based on the intuition in this new proof, I define a new family of robust non-contextuality inequalities from guessing games. And to do this, I need to also introduce this generalized notion of operational max relative entropy, which is a generalization of max relative entropy in quantum mechanics or quantum information. And then I will talk about general lower bounds on inaccessible information. And in the last part of the talk, I'm going to use these tools and these bounds to study noise thresholds for contextuality. So I will consider a setup like this where, you know, you have, let's say, an ideal preparation. You can prepare an arbitrary pure state, perhaps. And then you have some noise channel, and then you do ideal measurement. And so the question is whether the statistics observed in this kind of experiments can be for which noise levels you can describe the statistics observed in these experiments by model that satisfy PNC, preparation non-contextuality. By the way, please feel free to interrupt me if there are any questions at any point in the talk. I would prefer to have a more interactive presentation. Okay, so let me start by just quickly introducing my notations. So operational theories are just basically, you can think of them as a list of probabilities that can be directly measured in experiment. I'm focused in this talk on this simple setups where you have only a preparation followed by a measurement. And so probability of outcome M in measurement M in, and preparation P is denoted by this. And in quantum mechanics, this probability is given by, you know, standard Born's rule. So this is the density operator rho prepared by this preparation P. And Fm is the POVM element that describes this outcome M of measurement M. Can you see my pointer here?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So this curly P here denotes the set of all preparations, and set of all measurements are also denoted by M. I am going to assume different scenarios. In some of these scenarios, P will include all possible states, including all possible pure states of a quantum mechanical system. But in some other scenarios, P will be a limited set, probably a finite set or not a finite set, but this will be for example, you might be limited by noise, and so you can't prepare all pure states. So this the set of all preparations are denoted by P, and the set of all measurements are denoted by M. M also is not necessarily the set of all measurements, but I'm going to assume that they are tomographically complete, meaning that using the measurements in M, you can uniquely specify your density operator rho. So I will also talk about the ensembles of preparations. So for any set of preparations, we can think about applying them probabilistically. And so this will denote an ensemble where with probability PI, you are applying preparation PI. And a very fundamental concept for this talk is the notion of equivalent preparation. So if you have two ensembles, let's say this one, PI, PI, and P prime J, P prime J, then they are equivalent if for all measurements, they give you exactly the same statistics. So they are indistinguishable through any measurements. Okay, and so the next concept is ontological models. And so here, capital lambda will denote ontic space, lambda will be ontic state. And so for any preparation P, I associate a probability distribution over this ontic space, which satisfies the normalization, the standard normalization. And for any measurement, I associate a set of indicator functions or response functions that again satisfy the proper normalization, and the probability of any outcome M of measurement M on preparation P should be given by this formula. So this basically means that any correlation between preparation and the outcome of the measurement should be mediated through this random variable lambda. Oops, sorry, the typo. And symbol of one important assumption here is that I'm going to assume that if you have an ensemble of preparations with probability PI, you apply preparation PI, then the associated distribution will be just a convex combination of the distributions associated to each of these preparations. So this is called convex linearity. Okay, so this is just a summary of what I described. So for operational theory, in quantum mechanics, we describe, for any preparation corresponds a density operator, and any measurements corresponds to a POVM. And then ontological model, we describe it with probability distributions and response functions, and we have this identity. Okay, so a very important fundamental concept for this talk is the notion of preparation contextuality. And this is the fact that in any ontological model, or this is a property of an ontological model, and that the distribution that there are different scenarios that are physically or operationally indistinguishable from each other, but they are described by exactly the same but they are described by different probability distributions in the theory, in the ontological model. So for example, if you think about an ontological model where zero is described by this probability distribution, one is described by this another probability distribution, and plus and minus are described by this, then we know that this ensemble, the mixture, the equal mixture of zero and one, is indistinguishable from the equal mixture of plus and minus because of this identity for a single qubit. But in this model that I'm describing here, the equal mixture of the green distributions is not equal to equal mixture of this yellow distributions. So in this sense, the theory is doesn't satisfy PNC. It's contextual, preparation contextual. So preparation non-contextuality means that any two operation in distinguishable scenarios should have the same descriptions in the model. And so another way to phrase it is that if PA is preparation PA is equivalent to preparation PB, then the corresponding distribution should be equal, basically. And so this notion of preparation contextuality, as I mentioned before, is a generalization of the standard contextuality, or the more traditional notion of contextuality, which was introduced by Bell and Koshan and Spicker. But this notion of preparation non-contextuality is generalized notion of contextuality is introduced by Rob. And in the same paper, he also showed that an ideal quantum mechanical system cannot be described by a model satisfying PNC. So I'm going to show you a different proof for this, and that proof will be basically basis for non-contextuality inequalities that I present later. So basically in this talk, I want to interpret in preparation contextuality as the presence of inaccessible information. Inaccessible information in the sense that a hypothetical observer that can observe the value of the antique state can obtain this information, but in the operational theory, if we are limited to a set of measurements in the operation in the operational theory, we cannot obtain those informations. Okay, so let me now try to define it more precisely. So this particular approach to the notion of this concept or idea of inaccessible information, the particular approach that I take here is based on the notion of total variation distance. There are other ways to quantify this idea. I mean, this again is a very general intuition, but here I'm going to use this particular measure for quantifying inaccessible information. So this this is a measure of distinguishability of two probability distribution, total variation distance of mu and a and mu b. And it's a number between 0 and 1, and it has a very natural operational interpretation that I will discuss later. Now, preparation contextuality means that if two preparations are indistinguishable or equivalent, then their corresponding probability distributions in the ontological model should also be equal, and in particular, they should have 0 total variation distance, right? So the left-hand side, if preparation non-contextuality holds, then the left-hand side implies the right-hand side. The fact that the right-hand side implies the left-hand side, that's also, that holds even if the preparation non-contextuality is violated. So this is just basically, the fact that left-hand side implies the right-hand side, the fact that if this total variation distance is 0, then the two preparations should be indistinguishable. This basically follows from, for example, monotonicity of total variation distance under data processing. Okay, so that's doesn't depend on preparation non-contextuality. Okay, so this way of formulating preparation non-contextuality then suggests that maybe to quantify violation of preparation non-contextuality or deviation from this condition, I can think about this condition that what is the total variation distance? What is the maximum value of this total variation distance for those preparations that satisfy this condition? So I define this notion of inaccessible information of an ontological model as the largest distance between distributions associated to pairs of equivalent preparations. So supremum over all PAs and PB that are equivalent. And you look at the supremum of this total variation distance between corresponding distributions. And in other words, another way to phrase this is to say that this inaccessible information is supremum over this distance when you can consider arbitrary ensembles. It's taken over all pairs of, because in this notion of equivalent preparation, they can also be ensembles of preparation. So this is the supremum over this total variation distance, where the supremum is taken over all pairs of ensembles of preparation that prepare the same density operator, basically. Okay, so let me pause here. This is the first important definition in this talk, and see if there are any questions about this. Okay. So this is a concept that is defined for an ontological model. But an operational theory can have different ontological models, and some can be, more economical or more efficient. And in the sense that they can have less amount of inaccessible information. So a more, natural quantity, which is a property of an operational theory rather than the ontological model, is obtained by taking infimum over all possible models on this inaccessible information that is defined here. So I define the inaccessible information of an operational theory as infimum over all models for this supremum of total variation distance. Okay, and this quantity, in a sense, has a very simple interpretation. Because total variation distance has a simple interpretation. So this quantity basically means that in any ontological model that describes the operational theory, one can find two preparations that are indistinguishable under all possible measurements, and yet a hypothetical observer who can observe the value and the Antique State lambda can distinguish them with probability of success at least equal to 1 plus inaccessible information information of the operational theory divided by 2. And here I'm assuming that the two preparations are given equal probability. So you're given either preparation A or B with equal probability, and you want to distinguish which one of them is given to you. They are, from the point of view of operational theory, they are indistinguishable. But from the point of view of the hypothetical observer who can observe the value of lambda, they might be distinguishable, and they can be distinguished with this probability. This is a probability of success. Furthermore, there exists a model for the operational theory such that the hypothetical observer cannot distinguish two equivalent preparations with probability larger than this number. So that's because basically this infimum. So I'm just thinking about the model for which this or this limit basically corresponding to this infimum. So if a model satisfies preparation non-contextuality, this inaccessible information of the model is zero basically. Okay.
In that last equation, that C prep min, yes?
Well, here I'm just saying model. Model satisfies preparation on contextuality. So sorry, this is an additional comment. This is not exactly about the interpretation. So this is an additional comment or remark that I want to make here, that if a model satisfies preparation on contextuality, then this quantity is zero. Now, if you take the standard definition, Rob's definition of preparation contextuality, in principle, you can have, you can have ontological models for which this quantity is zero, and yet they are not, they don't satisfy P and C, right? In other words, according to the standard definition of preparation non-contextuality, the other direction doesn't hold. You can't, C prep doesn't imply that model satisfies PNC. And this is because in an infinite, if you think about your, Antica space is infinite, then you can have two probability distributions whose total variation distance are zero, and yet they are not equal, right? And so according to the standard definition, if you take that standard definition, you would say that the model then is not, doesn't satisfy PNC, because these two distributions correspond to these indistinguishable preparations, and yet they are not the same. But I think it makes sense. So I'm proposing that it's reasonable to slightly modify that definition just to say that preparation non-contextuality is equivalent to this C pair equal to zero, because basically those preparations, if this kind of scenarios that I'm describing that happens in infinite dimensional spaces, those distributions are statistically indistinguishable from each other. So I think it's reasonable to relax that condition and say, we don't require the distributions to be exactly equal. It suffices that their total variation distance is zero. Then the model satisfies PNC. Okay, so this is just a side comment about the definition of PNC.
And Iman, if there's a finite number of ontic states, then there's no issue like this.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
Great. So we just for the record, we have some theorems on giving some conditions under which we know that there's a finite number of ontic states suffices for any model if it's non-contextual. So that might be relevant here.
I agree. Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, this minor technical issue that I mentioned is just relevant when we are thinking about infinite spaces. Otherwise, you can just say C per if model is satisfies PNC if and only if this is equal to zero. This inaccessible information is zero.
Iman, just a small comment here. I'm reminded. I hadn't thought of this before, but there's in the context of Cochin-Specker non-contextuality, there are these models by Clifton, Meyer, and Kent, so three separate things, where they basically kind of allow, say, like a given array in Hilbert space to be represented differently in different contexts, but sort of those differences have to be on a set of measure zero.
I see.
And by doing that, they could actually evade the contradiction. So I'm just pointing out that, in certain circumstances, giving you that freedom to differ on a set of measure zero is kind of already enough to get out of the contradiction. But the standard response to those approaches is that it's maybe like physically unreasonable to imagine that the response functions look like that.
Okay, I have to check that. I have to, I'm not aware of this. But so you are suggesting that that means like, so do you think those constructions are irrelevant in the sense that, you know, if two scenarios, if two distributions are just have total variation distance zero, then, you know, distinguishing between them should be irrelevant. Like you don't want to, like from the point of view of PNC, at least.
I'm not sure what the conclusion is. I guess it just struck me that it might be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have to
worthwhile to rethink.
Right.
That it was slightly, it wasn't about preparation non-contextuality, is about measurement non-contextuality, and also where you assume that the outcomes are deterministic, so it's sort of in the Cauchon-Specker mold. I don't quite know how to fit it into what you're saying right now. It just struck me that it's sort of...
Yeah, I have to definitely check that. That's I wasn't aware of this, actually, that you can... but I have to check that. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions about this definition? Because these are, you know, important definitions for the rest of the talk. If there are any questions, it's a good time to discuss them. Again, you can feel free to interrupt me anytime there are questions. So this was about, you know, this definition is about the cases where the preparations are indistinguishable, right? So does this quantity tell us anything about the cases where the preparations are distinguishable? Let's say, you know, how does it tell us anything about the representation of distinguishable preparations in the ontological model? So to answer that, I think about, it's useful to think about trace distance, which is basically a quantum version of the total variation distance. This is just one half of the L1 norm of rho A minus rho B, which is just sum of the singular values. And if C perp is equal to zero, then total variation is equal to zero if and only if this trace is equal to zero. This trace distance is equal to zero. So, you know, for example, this, you know, the fact that C perp is equal to zero tells me that if the two, you know, the fact that we know from before that if two density operators are indistinguishable, then their corresponding and probable distributions in the ontological model should also be indistinguishable. But what about the cases where these density operators are distinguishable? And to answer this, it's useful to note that trace distance can also be understood as a kind of equivalence relation. So when there exists density operators rho prime A and rho prime B, such that you have this equivalence relation, the mixture of rho A and rho prime A with this proper weights is equal to the mixture of rho B and rho prime B, where this, you know, coefficients are equal on both sides. So you can understand the notion of total, the notion of trace distance also in terms of equivalence relations in the operational theory. And in particular, actually, based on this intuition, you can define trace distance on just based on this kind of equivalence relations. You can define trace distance of rho A and rho B as the minimum value of R such that there exist density operators rho prime A and rho prime B such that this equality holds. And so this, you know, allows me to define the notion of trace distance just in terms of equivalence relations. So in this paper, I talk more about this idea and how you can generalize the notion of trace distance to arbitrary operational theories, and how this also gives you a nice geometrical interpretation of trace distance that I think could be interesting for other applications. But basically, this based on this observation, now I can relate the trace distance of these two different density operators, rho A and rho B, to their corresponding probability distributions in the ontological model. In particular, you can argue that if rho prime A, both rho prime A and rho prime B can be prepared in the operational theory, then you have this upper bound on the difference between the total variation distance between the corresponding probability distributions and and the trace distance. So this is, in particular, is upper bounded by 2C per, right? Actually, in an earlier version of the paper, I was thinking about just defining this quantity instead of as C per, and basically you know, minimizing over this quantity for all possible rho A's and rho B. And it's also, I think, an interesting quantity to look, but it's closely related to C perp. So if you, you know, it's in particular, it's is upper bounded by 2 times this quantity. Okay. So the conclusion is, you know, even though I defined the notion of inaccessible information in terms of indistinguishable scenarios, in terms of equivalent preparations, it also tells me something about you know, the representation of density operators that are not equivalent with each other, or density operators that are not equal, or preparations that are not equivalent to each other, based on this observation, basically. Okay. So
you talk about minimizing relative to maybe all rho A and rho B. So I'm wondering if that means if you have many different preparation equivalence relations, maybe a continuum of preparation equivalence relations, then when you talk about this sort of C prep, is it a property of a given equivalence, or is it sort of minimized over all equivalencies?
You have to include all equivalence relations. So it's aware of all equivalence relations in the theory, right? So
so it's kind of like the,
because it finds the point where, you know, this quantity is minimized. So the basically assuming that rho A and rho B are equal, then it finds the point where this is minimized. So you have to consider all equivalence relation and see where you can find a particular equivalence relation where this total variation distance is minimized.
So my concern then is, suppose that I have a model where I have 2 equivalence relations, and I'm able to find an ontological model such that either of the two is satisfied by the ontological model. Like either this equivalence relationship holds with total variation zero, or the other one does, but I can't do both at the same time, right? So if we're doing a minimization over all relations, then I would say this C preparation is equal to zero because I can find one instance where these 2 preparations are supposed to be equivalent and the ontological model satisfies that. And yet it doesn't satisfy preparation non-contextuality.
Go back to this definition. So maybe, did I mention minimum? This is supremum.
Okay, got it. Okay, that does it.
Sorry, this was a typo. You're right. I mean, I have to look at the worst case, basically.
Okay, that got it.
Good. Thanks for clarification.
Can I ask another question at this stage? Sure,
please.
It's about the what is the generalization of trace distance to an arbitrary operational theory? In particular, like your comment, assuming rho A prime and rho B prime can be prepared, it makes it sound as if I'm wondering if your generalization is one where you just sort of find the largest value of R,
yes,
within the primed states that can be prepared in that operational theory.
Right.
That is the definition.
Exactly.
So then can't you drop that caveat, assuming they exist? I mean, that D trace has been defined in such a way that I don't need to assume anything exists. It's just that final equation should just be true for a standard operational theory, no?
No, I mean, if you in my operational theory, if I don't prepare this, I can prepare rho prime B and rho prime A, then this equivalence relation doesn't mean anything in the operational theory. And then I can't make this connection.
So I'm assuming that in this final equation, rho A and rho B now don't necessarily represent quantum states, but could be states in an arbitrary operational theory. Yes. And D trace doesn't necessarily represent the usual thing.
Yeah.
but instead represent something like the value of R.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're right.
Now such that rho A prime and rho B prime do exist to make that equivalence work.
If I modify this, actually, I think in the paper I denoted with also a mass bip detrace, basically. Then you don't, you're right. You don't need this because that's also included in the information about this. You're right. Thanks.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Good. Okay. So with these definitions, now the I can present the result or part of the result. For an ideal quantum mechanical system, I'm assuming that you can prepare all pure states and all perform all measurements. Then inaccessible information is just determined by the dimension of the Hilbert space. So that's the only relevant parameter. So it may happen that this inaccessible information is always one, by the way, right? Meaning that if you can prepare all, your theory includes all pure states and all measurements, then we know that it's not, we know that it's preparation contextual. And so we know that this quantity should be, or we expect that this quantity should be larger than zero. But it could be always one, right? So the question is, how does this depends on the dimension? And dimension is the only relevant parameter here. And so in this paper, I showed that this result, that for an operational theory corresponding to the ideal quantum mechanical system with finite dimensional Hilbert space, the inaccessible information satisfies this bound. It's between one, it's strictly less than one if the dimension is finite, and it's lower bounded by this quantity, 2 - √2/8, almost 7%. I don't believe that this is a tight bound. In the special case of a qubit, I can show that this is not only less than one, it's actually less than one half, less than or equal to one half. And the arguments, obviously I won't have time to go through all the arguments, but let me at least tell you how they are shown. So the upper bound that this quantity is strictly less than one is proven based on the result by Aronson et al. And a generalization by Lewis and I think Jennings and Rudolph, et cetera, in which orthogonal pure states are, non-orthogonal pure states are described by overlapping probability distributions. Okay, so that's how I get this upper bound. And for the lower bound, in the case of qubits, this lower upper bound, I just consider the quotient Speicher model of qubit and I calculate this quantity. I had to do this supremum basically for that model. And I showed that that's strictly less than one half. So in the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about this lower bound that, why is lower bounded by 7%, and which is established by a new family of guessing games basically. Okay, so this will be discussed in the rest of the talk. I realize that I am, I guess I don't have much time left, right? So how much time I have left? Who's the chair? I think Flamini is the chair, right?
There's no really rigid, we're not very strict, but.
Oh, okay, that's great.
So if you can make it in 15 minutes, that's
fine. Okay, 15 minutes. You're not rigid, but 15 minutes. Let me see. Okay, so I'm going to then skip my discussion about the proof of, proof of contextuality. That's just for intuition. So let me directly go to the new family of non-contextuality and inequalities from guessing games. So I consider this family of guessing games where Alice prepares, there are two random variables here, alphabet K, which goes from one to N, and message X, which goes from one to D. Alice randomly chooses K and X, randomly, uniformly at random and independent of each other, and apply preparation PKX. So preparation is labeled by alphabet and message. You should think of alphabet, for example, as the basis of the measurement, and message is the particular state in that basis, just to have an example. I will talk actually about an example. And then she also informs Bob about this particular alphabet K and ask him to perform a measurement and guess the message X. So Bob obtains an outcome Y, and he wins if his outcome Y coincides with X, right? So this is basically when he wins. Probability that Y is equal to X, given that he's performing a measurement which depends on K, the alphabet, and of course, it depends on the preparations. And so this will be the average probability of success in this game. Okay, so just to have a simple example in mind, so you can imagine that K equal to one and is corresponds to the alphabet equal to one alphabet basically is corresponds to this to a state 0 and 1, and the other alphabet corresponds to plus and minus. Then if Alice informs Bob about the alphabet, or in this case the basis, then he, in principle, in quantum mechanics, he can perform the measurements in X, in Z basis or X basis, and he can win this game with probability one. Okay, so guessing in this particular game that I'm describing here, the guessing probability in quantum mechanics is equal to one. But I want to argue that P and C, if this quantity C is equal to zero, then you can find an upper bound on the probability of success, and the upper bound is based on this, simple observation. So consider an arbitrary ontological model, and let's say mu kx is, the probability distribution associated with this preparation. So I can rewrite the probability of success in terms of the quantities in the ontological model. This is the response function. And then I, just use this simple fact that mu kx, this is the probability distribution associated with preparation kx, is less than max of x, maximum over x of mu kx. And then I can rewrite this in this form, okay, one. So I have this now, I have just dropped the summation over x and replace mu kx by maximum over kx. And then I use the fact that, this is, psi is just a response function to a measurement, so it should have a proper normalization. And then I can rewrite everything is just a simple algebra. I can write everything as 1 over d. D is the number of distinct messages of summation over lambda of max x mu x lambda. So mu x is just 1 over n of this summation over mu k x k. X, this bold x, you can think of it as a string, for example, of and a string of length n, basically, right? So I have to think about all d possible d to the power of n values and find this maximum. And similarly, you can find also a bound in terms of minimum of this, right? So my p guess will be upper bounded by something like this. And so, this, there is no assumption about p and c so far. It's just based on the assuming a particular ontological model, you can find this upper bound and p guess. Okay. Now note that this particular probability distribution that I'm describing here, you can understand it as the probability distribution associated to this ensemble. The ensemble where with probability one over n, you apply p preparation k and xk. Okay. So this ensemble prepare this density operator, rho bold x, and the corresponding probability distribution is mu x. And this simple observation now allows me to find, lower bounds and upper bounds on this mu x, different points lambda. Okay, so just to have a simple example, again, this will be my running example. Let's say, in this example that I discussed before, the corresponding row X that here I'm talking here, there will be four row and they correspond to these four points on the block sphere, 1, 1. So for K equal to one, X, if I choose X equal to one, and for K equal to two, if I choose X equal to one, I get this density operator. The recall mixture gave me this density operator. And for K equal to one, I choose density of X equal to one, and for K equal to two, if I choose X equal to two, then I get this density operator, et cetera. Right, so I get four density operators, and this density operators corresponds to these different mu bold x's that I have to understand. So I have to think about these four density operators and try to understand something about this mu x. Okay. And the bounds that I showed you before tells me that p guess is less than, in this case, in this example, is less than 1/2 of summation over lambda max over these quantities and 1 minus 1/2 of summation over lambda and mean over these quantities. So again, mu 1 is, for example, is the probability distribution associated with this density operator, et cetera. I have to think about these quantities now. Now I'm going to use an equivalence relation here. And so the idea is this particular density operator can be written as a mixture of the maximally mixed state, maximally mixed state and this pure state. Okay, so I can have this equivalency relation. And then if P and C holds, then this means that the probability distribution associated to mu 1 should be equal to this, where nu is the probability distribution associated with the maximally mixed state, a particular preparation, a fixed particular preparation of maximally mixed state. For example, the preparation which in which I apply preparation for 0 and 1 with equal probability. And you can repeat, you know, this kind of arguments for all the other four states that I get here. And you get four equivalence relations. And the point is, in all of them, you have this part which is due to the maximally mixed state constant. So you have always this part, constant part, which is due to the maximally mixed state, and a different part which depends on this particular pure state that I'm thinking here. And so now I plug in this bounds in my p guess, the formulas that I found for p guess. If I, for example, I apply this particular bound, then I need to think about mean mu x or minus mean x of mu x. And from this equivalence relation that I found, I know that mu x is lower bounded by this coefficient times nu lambda. Nu lambda, remember, is the probability distribution associated with the maximally mixed state. And so plugging here, I find that p guess will be upper bounded by this quantity, basically, 2 plus the square root of 2 over 4. So the point is, just to summarize the argument, I write all of these four states in terms of a linear, a mixture of maximally mixed state and some pure states. The coefficients of the maximally mixed state is the same for all four of them. And that tells me something about the minimum value of this mu x here. And it gives me basically an inequality that is can be interpreted as a PNC inequality. So if PNC holds, then you would expect that P guess should be less than this 2 plus the square root of 2 over 4. And if P guess, on the other hand, we know that in quantum mechanics, it's possible to achieve P guess equal to 1. Now, you can apply a similar game for the other bound that I obtained. There is another interesting relevant equivalence relation here where, you write this maximally mixed state in terms of a mixture of this density operator and this and this pure state. So here, this fixed part is the maximally mixed state, and I write it in terms of these two density operator. And then this gives me also an upper bound on this max x. And it turns out that, the upper bound that I obtained is actually coincide with what I had before. Okay. It's also 2 plus the square root of 2 over 4. So both of these bounds give me exactly the same thing in this case. Now, it turns out that there is this number 2 plus the square root of 2 over 4. It has a very simple and interesting interpretation. In terms of a different way of playing this guessing game, I don't have time to go through this different way of playing this guessing game, but it gives a very interesting, I think, understanding of why this bound holds and why this bound is tight, basically. Okay, so I'm going to skip this. If there are any questions, I can come back to this. But now let me explain how I can generalize this idea in 5 minutes. So the idea is, again, I need to find an upper bound on this P guess, maximum probability of success, in terms of this preparations which are ensemble, this ensemble of preparations. So I want to somehow think about this ensembles and find an upper bound on P guess. So the idea is I find a fixed preparation. In the previous example, that fixed preparation was the maximum mixing state, such that it has the maximum overlap with all these other preparations. And basically using that, I can find an upper bound, I can find an upper bound on P guess. Okay. Here, by the way, I'm assuming that P and C holds, meaning that this quantity inaccessible information is zero. Okay. So the right way of, so in other words, I have to minimize the maximum distance. So minimize the maximum distance of this preparation with all the other preparations that I get here. And it turns out that the right notion of distance for this problem, or the best way of quantifying the notion of distance, is in terms of notion of max relative entropy, and in particular generalization of max relative entropy for the case of operational theories. That gives me basically the best bound for guessing game, but I'm going to skip this. Just remember that this is a notion of distance, right? It's, strictly speaking, it's not a distance, but it gives you a notion of distinguishability of preparations, okay? Then you can basically, applying this approach, you can find this idea of finding the preparation that has minimum, by minimizing the maximum distance, you can basically think of, find quantities which gives you an idea about the radius of this region, the radius of the set of all these preparations that you get. Based on this, preparation radius, you may call it just preparation radius, you can find upper bound on P guess, okay? So this, can be defined for any operational theory, but if you go back to, this kind of qubit examples, actually you will find that, the concept of the preparation radius that I obtain here is actually related to the distance or radius on block sphere. So you will find that, let me actually just go through this examples quickly. So you find that the P guess is upper bounded by 1 plus max of x nx. So what is nx? Nx is the average block vector for these, distributions, that for these density operators that you get by considering the mixture of all those preparations. And so, for example, in this example that I discussed before, that length is just this square root of 2/2. Okay. And so you find that P guess is upper bounded by 1 plus the square root of 2/2. So this is just the bound that I described before. You can think about the sixth example with six preparations. Again, the P guess will be bounded by 1 plus the length of these average density operators. And in this case, I recover a bound that was previously found in this paper by Rob and collaborators and PI. But here, I only assume P and C, basically. I only assume that if P and C, I show that if P and C holds, then P of guess is upper bounded by this number. And you can also think about the limit n goes to infinity. So you can assume that, your basically alphabet is chosen uniformly as random in all directions. And then you find that your P guess will be upper bounded by 75%. Okay. I understand that I'm going quickly in here, and you probably can't follow all the details. But I hope that at least gives you an idea about, the approach. So the approach is just to think about these preparations that corresponds to mixture of preparations in this guessing game, and then think about the radius of this preparation, what you get from this radius, and that gives you an upper bound on pks. Okay, and and then you know you can. So here in all this discussion, I assume that this quantity inaccessible information is zero. Now you can think about what happens in when the inaccessible information is non-zero. Then you find that your bounds, there will be some corrections in your upper bounds, which depends on the inaccessible information. And you know, when you have inaccessible information, then these bounds become weaker, basically. So this term C are again inaccessible information, and my bound becomes weaker. Again, the bound depends on these quantities. These quantities are infimum over all preparations of maximum over this PX preparations, basically. So this is minimizing the maximum, basically. That gives you an idea of the radius of this region of the preparations, basically. So you can interpret that actually as a radius. And then using this, I can find a lower bound on inaccessible information. So I can translate this as a lower bound on inaccessible information. And in particular, the result that I mentioned before, that this lower bound is like 7% is obtained by applying one of these bounds for this particular example that I was discussed before, that I was discussing before. Okay. And finally, let me say just a couple of words about how we can apply this results to apply to find noise thresholds for contextuality. So if you think about the settings where you have ideal preparation followed by a noise process and then followed by an ideal measurement, then you can absorb this noise process in your preparation and call everything together as a preparation in the operational theory. And then this means that at the presence of noise, if my ideal preparations was, for example, include all possible pure states, now I'm of a qubit, now I'm just sticking to a smaller sphere on the qubit. And then you can apply this result to find a threshold for contextuality, for the presence of contextuality, a threshold for noise, basically, that for the presence of contextuality in the system. So it turns out that the right or easy measure of noise is in terms of the notion of average gate fidelity, because average gate fidelity can be easily connected to this guessing probability in these guessing games. And so I obviously can't go through all the details, but let me at least just mention one specific useful observation, that if your noise channel, let's say, is an invertible function, which is, for example, happens for the polarizing channel, then the under the noise process, equivalency classes don't change. So any quantity, let's say, for example, I talked about this notion of generalizing trace distance or generalizing max relative entropy. Okay, so these quantities, if they are only defined in terms of this equivalence relation, they don't change. And so when I obtain this upper bounds on the guessing probability, so in the right-hand side of these bounds, I have quantities, let's say, for example, this bound, I have quantities that are defined only in terms of the equivalency classes, equivalency relations. So these upper bounds don't change. They don't see the effect of noise, but this guessing probability see the effect of noise. It becomes smaller and smaller. So at some point, you will reach a point where this non-contextuality equality will be satisfied. Right, and at that point you this gives me a noise threshold for contextuality. Just one last comment that if you apply this, for example, to understanding the polarizing channel, how the polarizing channel affects at which noise level I can have a model that says why PNC and MNC, then you will find that if P is this parameter in the polarizing channel, if P is less than this value, then you don't have PNC. And if P is larger than D over D plus one, D is the dimension, then you have both PNC and MNC, or equivalent to you have an entanglement breaking channel, basically. So in the case of a qubit, a single qubit, this bound is tight. So in particular, you find this in the case of a qubit, you find that if the noise parameter P is between 0 and 1/2, then you have preparation context reality. If the noise is larger than 2/3, then you have both PNC and MNC. And there's this, you know, region in between that you have preparation context reality. So the model is says you can find models where you have PNC, but not measurement, not MNC basically. So there's this gap between the noise threshold for PC and PNC versus plus MNC. Okay, sorry that in the last part of the talk, I had to go quickly and I couldn't go through all the arguments, but let me stop at this summary slide. And yeah, thank you for your attention.
So thank you very much for the talk. And yeah, I see people clapping, but.
As I said, this was the first time I was presenting this work and I realized the usual mistake, I prepared a little bit more than what I should have. But hope you can at least get some ideas about the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And so we have time for questions. Yeah, Rob.
I can start with one. At the very end, the intermediate region between where the depolarization is between 1/2 and 2/3, I wonder if you just said it wrong. I expected you to say in that region, you can, let's see if I get this right. You can find a measurement, no. How did you say it exactly? You can find a preparation non-contextual model?
You can find a preparation non-contextual model that doesn't satisfy MNC.
You can find something that's preparation non-contextual, but is measurement contextual.
Yes. That's a better way.
Okay. Yeah.
And the model, by the way, is just a modification of the quotient Spreker model. So I add enough noise to quotient Spreker model so that it becomes PNC. And I basically mix it with a uniform, distribution.
I see. And that, how does that turn into PNC? You mix it with the uniform distribution?
Well, at some point, this is the way I prove it. I mean, you don't need to necessarily do it in this way, but I show that the associated distributions is equal to you can write it down as an outcome of a measurement on the density operator, as the probability of outcome of measurement on a density operator. So a measurement that project you to arbitrary direction basically.
Because in the quotient Spreker model, you sort of have distributions that if I talk about the Z basis, I think they fall to zero on the equator. So there's sort of distributions for Z up, which are kind of a lobe in the northern hemisphere, and distributions for Z down are confined to the southern hemisphere. So right. I can imagine if you sort of convoluted that with some noise, so that sort of doubly, if the mixture is sort of points out on the north and south poles, and for the X basis, it points out here. So I can imagine if you add noise, you could make those things kind of average out to a uniform distribution over the sphere and get something that's preparation non-contextual. But if I just added in some weight of uniform distribution, it seems like I would still always have.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it's not exactly uniform. I have to look at, this is in one of the appendices of the paper. I understand your point. But it's basically a modification. It's closely related to, and the way I write it down, I just show, I as I said, I mean, the model is basically perform the measurement that projects you in arbitrary direction, right? The P, write down the P of VM as an integral, which is, that projects you in arbitrary direction, and that defines the ontological model, right? And so this is how the ontological model defined. I have to remember how it's connected to quotient aspect model, but you're right about the comment.
Okay, but I think I get the basic idea. Thanks.
Sure.
I have more questions, but I'll let other people have a chance.
So are there other questions? David?
At the very start of your talk, it sounded like you motivated the idea of inaccessible information from some kind of Halevo-bound connection that, yeah, we can put in a lot of classical information into specifying the quantum state, but then somebody who's trying to measure it isn't going to get all of that information back out. Is there a tight connection here to the notion, the notion of inaccessible information here, you had a slide about it, and it wasn't obviously connected to that. It seemed more like about the, I mean, maybe it is connected, I just didn't, you didn't explicitly come back to it, so I haven't had time to think about it.
So is it related to Halevo bound?
Is your notion of inaccessible information here, which was more about like if an observer had access to lambda, how much more could they say about what preparation was done than if they had access to the operational statistics?
Right.
Is that connected to the Halevo bound?
It's what? These are two different ways of quantifying information. Halevo is more about entropic, quantities. This is more about single shot quantities, but I think the same idea. You can basically take this idea and basically use different measure of information. Like for example, you can say I maximize what is the maximum mutual information between lambda as a random variable and the preparation that you choose and the set of and the preparation that you choose in a set of equivalent preparation. So take a set of equivalent preparation, define a label for your preparation in that set. Think of that as a random variable and lambda as another random variable and take as what is the maximum mutual information between these two random variables. That would be something which is more closer to that whole level quantity that you described. But so this is just choosing a different measure of information. But note that, I think this inequality that I wrote here, this is somehow the way to go back to that intuition. So it's relates the distinguishability at the ontological level to the distinguishability at operational level by this quantity. Right? So this is the connection, the closest connection I can make with that definition.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
I have a question.
Sure.
So I was wondering how your non-contextuality inequality relates to others, in particular. For example, when you consider what is called the simplest non-trivial scenario where you have four preparations and two tomographically complete measurements, if you get the same thing, for example, I think Matt Cousey had a result on that, or...
Yeah. This one? Which one? This one?
Yes, so I think, there you consider eight preparations.
Right.
I guess the simplest scenario you can think of are four preparations and the tomography. Oh,
I have looked at that for brief amount of time a year ago, but not more than that. So I didn't spend, I think after our discussion basically. So, but no, I haven't thought about that more.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good question. Well, look, basically I think, maybe this is not exactly about your question, but I think any preparation and non-contextuality inequality, you can now think of it, try to obtain a lower bound on this inaccessible information from any preparation non-contextuality inequality. Basically, that's, I think, also another thing that I have to look, like, for example, there are all other preparation non-contextuality inequalities, and what to tell us about the, maybe they can find a tighter bounds on accessible information.
So, Rob, you wanted to ask more questions.
Yeah, thanks. I'm thinking about what you would have to do to experimentally test some of these inequalities. So my impression is that you could do it this way. You could say, well, if I have a way of experimentally figuring out what the state and effect spaces are, say using the formalism of generalized probabilistic theories. So we did an experiment in Waterloo that was kind of like this, where you get things that are slightly noisy versions of the Bloch sphere. So if you had no idea what theory governed the world, you could sort of reconstruct it. And then you could ask, what's the guessing, the best guessing probability you could get for a given game when your states and measurements are chosen from the ones that your experiment has said are possible. And then you could say, is that guessing probability exceeding the PNC bound?
Right.
I'm just wondering if I'm right about that, or is there some more direct way that you could get an estimate of the guessing probability without presuming the correctness of quantum theory? Like, you showed us derivations where here's the guessing probability if quantum theory is true, and it violates the bound. But if you just have some arbitrary operational theory,
right,
or some experimental data, actually, I'm more interested in the case where you have the experimental data,
right,
and you don't want to presume the correctness of quantum theory. You just want to go from the experimental data and conclude that a non-contextual model is impossible.
Right. So, in this description, I didn't go through details. The input is only operational theory. So I define this, here I find an upper bound in terms of quantities, which are defined only in terms of the equivalence of relations in the operational theory, in terms of this D max that I define in the operational theory. So these quantities, which basically give you an idea of the radius of this region that is occupied by all these preparations that you get from the guessing game. So this is only defined in terms of the equivalence of relation on the operational theory. So you don't need to, just from that statistics, you can drive these quantities, this determines the radius, and then you have can apply this upper bound.
So the inferment is done over sort of the set of all preparations that are possible according to this operational theory.
Yes.
Which suggests, at first glance, that you will need to characterize the full set of states that your operational theory allows, or at least the one that maybe that you can realize in the lab. But is there maybe some way around that, that actually you know that this PF point is somehow, within the convex hull of the preparations you actually did. And so you don't actually need to vary over all preparations that your operational theory allows. It's enough to vary over those preparations that are inside that convex hull. Because that would be sort of a big savings. You wouldn't have to go and do any more preparations in the lab.
Right.
To kind of fill, to find out what is the space of preparations one needs to vary over in this infimum. You could, free yourself from that problem.
I agree with you, and I think that's the case, but you just define your operational theory based on this, let's say 5 or 8 preparations that you have defined, and call that your operational theory, and then
you can't easily do it in the following sense. I think that we're going, this is a bit tangential to what I was talking about before, but if the measurements and preparations that define your task, your guessing game, aren't to themselves tomographically complete.
I see. Yeah.
Then estimates of distances aren't going to make sense, because you can't really ever evaluate equivalences unless you've got a tomographically complete set on the other side to evaluate them with respect to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. But still, these quantities can be defined.
I guess I'm wondering. I agree they can be defined if I have a description of the operational theory. The question is more sort of if I've done 17 preparations as part of some guessing game, and I don't want to, I want to free myself from having to know what the rest of the operational theory looks like. But let's say I know it's tomographically complete, these 17 preparations. Can I take the infim just over the convex hull and not worry about what the rest of the state space looks like?
That's a good question. And I think the answer is yes. I have to think a little bit about it, but you're right. I think the answer is yes. And again, just to give you an intuition about what is obtained in this upper bound, what is the relevant quantity in the right-hand side in the bound, is just finding this radius of the region that is occupied by the mixture of these different preparations, right? So, so in this simple example that we were discussing before, this radius is just square root of 2/2. And this basically suggests that the answer to your question is yes. I mean, you want the point in the middle to be, that point that achieves that infimum should be inside the convex hull of that point. I think the answer is yes, but I have to think a little bit about it more carefully. And that's a good point, thanks.
It might not actually, I'm thinking about it, might not free you up that much in terms of what you have to do experimentally, because typically an experiment, if you don't want to presume the correctness of quantum theory, you don't know what set of preparations, set of measurements are going to be tomographically complete. So you kind of have to do a lot of different preparations and measurements just to be confident that the subset you're focused on are actually tomographically complete in the sense that, you know, any other preparation can be written in terms of them. So I suspect that you don't really avoid the problem of having to characterize a bigger set of preparations and measurements. You're probably going to have to do that anyhow to just be confident about your assessments of tomographic completeness.
I see.
And anyhow, okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Yeah, I have to mention that explicitly if that's the case. And I expect that that should be the case. You're right. Any other questions?
If we have no more questions, we can thank our speaker again.